Okay, let's get started here, and we'll begin in chapter one with the method. Here's the big idea in 76 words. There's a fundamental disconnect between the way we pitch anything and the way it is received by our audience. As a result, at the crucial moment when it's most important to be convincing, 9 out of 10 times we are not. Our most important messages have a surprisingly low chance of getting through. You need to understand why this disconnect occurs in order to overcome it, succeed, and certainly profit. This book tells you how. I am not a natural. I pitch deals for a living. My job is to raise capital for businesses looking to expand rapidly or to go public. I'm good at it. When companies need money, I get it for them. I've raised millions for deals involving Marriott, Hershey's, Citigroup, many other household names, and I continue to do so at a rate of about $2 million per week. From the outside, the reasons for my success seem simple. I offer wealthy investors profitable deals that involve Wall Street banks, but others do that too. Yet, I raise a lot more money than they do. They compete in the same market, do the same type of deals, pitch the same kind of facts and figures, but the numbers show I'm consistently one of the best. The difference isn't luck, it's not a special gift, and I have no background in sales. What I do have is a good method. As it turns out, pitching is one of those business skills that depends heavily on the method you use and not how hard you try. Better method, more money. Much better method, much more money. It's no different for you. The better you are at advocating your position, the more successful you will be. Maybe you want to sell an idea to investors, convince a client to choose you over the other guy, or even explain to your boss why you should be paid more. I can help you get better at it using 5 methods in this book. Pitching a master of the universe. Over the years, I've pitched to and closed deals with some of the iconic business people of our time, including founding members of Yahoo, Google, and Qualcomm. But the story of what I can offer you cannot really be told without my explaining the day I went to pitch one of the guys that Tom Wolfe would describe as a master of the universe. Jonathan, never Johnny or even John, is an investment banker who controls vast sums of capital. He gets between 600 and 800 pitches a year. That's 3 or 4 every business day. He often makes multi-million dollar investment decisions based on no more information than a few emails on his BlackBerry. As a dealmaker, this guy, and I have absolutely no intention of giving you his name, he sues everyone and anyone at a moment's notice. He is the real deal. There are 3 things you must know about Jonathan. First, he's a math phenom who can calculate yield curves in his head. He doesn't need spreadsheets. He can instantly analyze what you are pitching him. Second, he's seen more than 10,000 deals and can detect any kind of flaw or BS no matter how well you've hidden it. Third, he's tough talking and at the same time witty and charismatic. And the upshot is, when he's pitching you, his chances are good. When you're pitching him, yours aren't. Yet, if you want to be taken seriously in venture capital, you need to have done a deal with this guy. And so, some years ago, when I was working to raise money for a software company, I arranged to pitch Jonathan and his investment team. Given the reputation, I knew if I got them on board with my deal, it would be easy to raise money from other investors who were still undecided. They'd say, "Hey, if Jonathan signed off on this, then I'm in too." But Jonathan knew the power of his endorsement, and he wasn't going to give me an easy win. As my pitch got underway, he made things really difficult. Maybe it was for sport, maybe he was just having a bad day, but it was clear he wanted to take and keep control of the whole presentation. I didn't realize this at the start, however, so I began, as I always do, by framing. Frames create context and relevance. As we'll see, the person who owns the frame owns the conversation. I explained exactly what I would and would not be talking about, and Jonathan immediately started giving me a type of resistance called deframing, which is exactly what it sounds like. For example, when I said, "Hey, we expect revenues to be $10 million next year," he cut me off and he changed the frame with this: "Oren, who cares about your made-up revenue projections? Tell me what your expenses are going to be." A minute later, I was explaining again, "Hey, our secret sauce is such and such a